as he spread her arms wide and came running at Ryan, where he stood with his back to the balcony.
No, you are.
Ryan threw the lamp straight at the woman, striking her across her sagging breasts. The flame caught the oil, and she blossomed into red-orange fire. For a heart-stopping moment, Ryan made an almost catastrophic error. He was hypnotized by the success of his plan, seeing Sissy's hair burst into flaring light, her chubby cheeks blistering. Despite her agony, she was still determined on revenge, lunging toward the one-eyed man, trying to clasp him to her so that he could share her burning doom. Only at the last nanosecond did he get his act together, and he dove to his right. He felt her hands brush against him, the sudden warmth of her passing. As he rolled up into a crouch, he saw the woman, unable to stop her murderous charge, reach the balcony beyond the bedroom. And Sissy was gone from their sight, leaving a trail of flames across the room, the curtains already ablaze, one of the beds starting to burn. Trader rushed with Ryan to peer out into the blackness, careful not to step onto what had been the hand-hewn balcony. Both men saw the falling star, trailing silver fire like a blazing comet, plummeting the hundreds upon hundreds of feet toward the distant, invisible river.
There she goes, Ryan.
Time for us to go, too. That noise will attract some interest any moment.
Ryan grabbed the fallen revolver and quickly opened the door, bumping into Andy Arkadin, who had been running along the corridor.
What's happening in there?
The sec chief was holding a small caliber gun in his right hand, down along the thigh.
Both the sluts are dead. All your men.
Yeah, just don't shoot me. You know where your blasters are. With the Baron. Just take them and go. It won't stop you. Just take them and get out of here.
Ryan nodded, pushing past Arkadin. Trader also nodded, but shot the man once through the throat, and followed Ryan along the hallway.
You didn't have to do that, Trader.
Trader's feral smile brought back 100 bloody memories.
Fuck. I don't have to do anything.
JB made his way around the back of the ville, seeing how far he could go before reaching the point where the old hotel was toppling into the limitless canyon on his right. The first floor seemed to be totally unoccupied, but a few lights blazed on the top floor. One of them came from a room whose balcony was hanging so far over the black velvet abyss that it looked like a tug on a spider web would bring it down.
Help! Murder! Help!
At the sound of the woman's voice, JB froze in the shadows. The woman's voice came from just above him.
Come on, traitor, now!
After a moment's hesitation, glancing up to see if there was any possible way he could climb into the ville, JB spun on his heel and started to run back toward the garage, abandoning any pretense at secrecy.
What's up?
JB ignored Abe's question and tugged the rusting doors open.
Just get her started. Ryan and Trader could be in need of some transport in the next few minutes.
The landwag turned over easily, filling the garage with exhaust fumes. Abe was at the wheel, his gun on the seat at his side. JB stood on the step, holding the Uzi, the scattergun across his back.
Where are we going?
Around the front, I guess. Park inside of the main doors. Keep her running. Watch and wait.
There was a firefight at the top of the main staircase. A bullet peeled a neat strip of white wood off the balustrade close to Ryan's right elbow, and Ryan returned the favor, shooting the crouching sec man through the top of the left shoulder, knocking him flat on his back.
This blaster's shit.
So's mine. Still, we should have her own back in a minute or so. Which way?
Left at the bottom.
Behind them, Ryan and Trader could now hear the distant roar of flames, and the building shuddered.
Feels like the whole place might go over the edge.
Uh-huh. Best we get out of here first.
Trader led the way slowly down the stairs, waving his gun threateningly at anyone who appeared. No more shots were fired at them. Just as they reached the first floor level, Baron Torrance lurched into sight. He held a gnawed chicken leg in one greasy fist and a chipped tumbler of red wine in his other hand, sloshing it over the floor as he staggered toward the two outlanders.
We've come for our blasters, Baron.
Recognition dawned in the Baron's red-rimmed eyes.
It's the Outlanders going to marry my little girl. Husbands?
Yeah. Only trouble is, it seems like we're widowers and not husbands.
You didn't need to tell him that. Just makes it harder.
Who the fuck cares? A lot of the time, hardest is really easiest, Ryan.
Ryan was aware that the cavernous lobby of Hightower was rapidly becoming deserted. Once it became obvious that a ship was doomed to sink, the rats wouldn't want to hang around.
Let's get the blasters and hit the trail, Trader.
Torrance placed his piece of chicken and glass of wine on a long table in the hallway and moved to block their path.
You said about widowers. What's that mean?
Nothing.
Tell me!
We don't have time.
Trader leveled his blaster. The Baron took three halting steps backward, his arms flailing for balance, a bloody hole in his forehead. Trader headed past the tottering corpse, into the musty stench of the late Baron Torrance's quarters.
There.
Trader pointed to the Armalite, the Sig Sauer, the Steyr, and an assortment of glinting steel blades, including Ryan's own favorite Panga. Above them, they heard the deep rumble of shifting timber and crumbling walls. It seemed to vibrate through the marrow of their bones. As the two outlanders ran out of the main doors, past the sprawled body of the Baron, the entire building seemed to be dying. They could see the fiery glow of flames above them, and the lobby was thick with almost impenetrable smoke. They paused for a moment, unchallenged, in the fresher air outside. Suddenly a land wag loomed out of the haze, with JB hanging on outside.
Going our way?
Back at the ranch, Ronnie and Raylene Warren took to their bed and weren't disturbed through all the hours of darkness. Mildred slept in the next room to Doc's, and she heard one of the strangers get up a couple of times during the night and make his or her fumbling way along the hallway to the back door, going to use the outhouse. Mildred lay awake for an hour or more after the second occasion. The moonlight sliced through the gap at the top of the blinds, moving inexorably across the wall of the bedroom. Over the long week since Ryan and JB had departed for the far northwest on their quest to track down the legendary traitor, Mildred had thought a lot about her relationship with John Dix. But all the thinking and agonizing had only blurred her feelings. The word that fluttered at the edge of her consciousness was love. Was that a wildly foolish idea for someone of her age? She felt slight pressure on her bladder and wondered about getting up and going out back. But the night was cold, and she resisted. That thought took her once again to their visitors, Raylene and Ronnie. She had offered to examine them, pointing out that she was a real, qualified doctor, but they'd been evasive, saying that they just needed some rest, which was obviously true. But all her medical training told her that there was something seriously wrong with the couple. Lying there, half asleep, Mildred mentally ticked off the symptoms she'd been able to observe. Both were exhausted and had sallow complexions, despite having been out in the New Mexico sun for days. Mildred frowned as she realized how vague they'd both been about precisely where they'd been traveling and just where they'd originally located the treasure in their wagon that was so important to them. Both had colds and running noses. Raylene in particular had a nasty rash around her mouth, scabbing all over her fried and crusted lips. Her hair looked thin and unhealthy. Ronnie's hair also seemed to be in poor shape. As Raylene had sipped at a beaker of buttermilk, she'd winced, explaining that her gums were sore, and the rim of the mug had been smeared with a film of blood when Mildred took it out to the kitchen to wash up. Ronnie's hand had been very sore. He explained that it came from driving the team when he wasn't all that used to the reins. That was why he'd lost the nails of three or four fingers. Mildred was slipping away into sleep. In a dream, she was sitting at a large round mahogany table with a heavily carved scalloped edge, with a huge jigsaw puzzle spread out in front of her. If only she could get the shapes to come together, she knew that they would make sense. But in her dream, Mildred had a terrible sense of foreboding, and she wasn't sure that she wanted to complete the puzzle. Christy was shaking her by the shoulder, leaning over the bed.
Come on, Mildred. I need help.
What?
Raylene's ill.
What kind?
Mildred sat up and rubbed the sleep from her eyes. She saw that it was a bright, sunny morning.
Puking and shitting, bringing up blood as well.
Mildred's dream came swimming back to haunt her, and she took a deep breath.
I think this is going to be triple bad news, Christy.